Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock Horizon Investments Economic Update call. Hancock Horizon Investments provides this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david_lundgren@hancockhorizon.com. Today we have Chief Investment Strategist John Portwood and Investment Directors Jeffrey Tangus, Greg Hileski, and Richard Chauvin. And the moderator today will be David Lundgren, Chief Investment Officer.
Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this month's edition of our Market and Economic Update call. And as everyone is probably very well aware, we are exactly 1 week away from Election Day. Obviously, has been stealing the headlines for months now, and is really coming to a head. So, John, let's start with you. First of all, have you ever seen anything like this? This election is unique and different in so many ways. Have you ever experienced anything similar?
No, this is really something unique. I guess it's not unique in history. You might go back to the 1960s and find, in the late 1960s, and find another similar, election period that was really contentious. But this one has aspects that, according to some historians, you won't find at any time since 1860. And 1860, we know, was not a precursor of exciting times in the country, pretty sad times, obviously. And we probably haven't since that time seen, and I'm not implying that, you know, what's coming is related to anything that happened between 1861 and 1865, but in any case, we probably haven't seen a cultural, economic, and political divide, you know, this great, certainly probably since World War II. So it's a pretty significant time, and the implications probably have not been fully realized, I guess.
And John, you know, I think for this morning's purposes, we really like to focus in on market and economic impact of the election. And I think a lot of the political strategists that we follow that we think are fairly reputable, as well as polling data, for whatever that's worth these days, it seems to be the expected outcome is that Hillary Clinton wins the executive branch, the Republicans retain the House, and the Senate really is a toss-up. You know, I think based on what I've read and seen, it could go either way, 50-50. But no one will have really the 60 votes needed to close debate. So, the way I see it, it's the expected outcome is status quo. First of all, tell me, what do you think the odds are of that outcome occurring? And then let's talk a little bit about the market and economic impact.
That's probably, the consensus leaning at present. What you talked about there. I would guess the odds are pretty high. Certainly greater than 50%. I don't know whether they'd be as high as 80%. Given recent events and announcements, but probably pretty high. The odds of one party or the other having a clean sweep of Congress, you know, and getting and the presidency, probably pretty low, probably somewhere in the 20% range. So it's quite likely that, you know, something approaching the status quo is what we're going to get. But again, this, you know, the situation is uncertain and really changing by the day. So while we can't bet on it, I guess that is a more likely outcome.
And what do you think? So, market. And we'll talk about the unexpected outcomes, but let's kind of focus in on the expected outcome. Let's talk a little bit about market reaction, if any, and maybe on a longer term basis. Is this good for the economy? Is it bad for the economy? Is it really sort of, you know, we stay in the same environment that we're in today?
In the short run, there could always be some sort of market reaction to an election outcome. prior to the last, few weeks, I guess, the stock market and the Clinton polls seemed to be tightly linked. So if Clinton polls were rising, the stock market was rising, suggesting that the market was anticipating that Clinton would win and the market was sort of adjusting itself for something like that. In recent weeks, the market's down a little bit. People who look at some numbers since World War II, have come up with a correlation. I don't think it's all as tight as they think, wherein if the market is down between July and October, any amount at all, then the odds tilt about 80% in favor of the challenger at the time, and that would suggest a Trump victory. But when you look at the individual industries and companies that the analysts expect would benefit most, and I think this is kind of a spurious thing to do too, but what they think might benefit most from a Trump victory or a Clinton victory, and you compare those portfolios side by side, you find that nothing's happening. So even the market appears to be taking a neutral position now as far as the future is concerned. But when the election is probably decided, I think in the past quite often there's been a relief rally of some sort, but it's always possible we could get one of those Brexit kind of situations where people are leaning one way and they think a certain thing is going to happen in the market. It doesn't, to the extent that they have positioned portfolios for some short-term trading opportunity and it doesn't occur, then you might get a great deal of volatility out of it. But in the long run, what really counts more as far as the markets and the economy is concerned is what's happening to the basic economic trends. And as we know currently, the economic trends are not quite as favorable as they should be. It doesn't look like that's going to change significantly in the near term. And, so the market may not really react, that significantly, given no particular, change in the current picture. But after the election, something is probably going to happen in the market. It's hard to figure out what it is, but there probably will be some sort of near-term volatility. But in terms of long-term significance, perhaps not. Now, the other thing you mentioned, Dave, about long-term significance concerning the election, if political contentiousness and hardline political approaches, to the extent that has some impact on economies in the long run. And I think it probably will in this case, because we probably need some sort of policy decisions that are some kind of policy decisions are necessary anyway to improve the economic situation if we can get some that everybody can agree on. That's not likely to happen going forward. Things are so contentious now. And the battle lines between the parties have hardened now into trench warfare, and there's not going to be any kissing and making up when this thing is over. And going back to the Reagan years and mourning in America, it certainly isn't mourning in America. So the political contentiousness will continue. It could be one of the nastiest things we've seen in a long time. And if that's the case, then absent a crisis, probably not very much is going to be done, and you still have a relatively uncertain, economic atmosphere, and it's unlikely for any significant policy measures that might help in terms of improving the economy going forward. So it's a very difficult situation at this point, and we'll just have to see how it works out. But the portents at this point are not particularly attractive for any political agreements next year.
Hey, Dave, John?
Yeah,
Greg.
I was going to make a comment. I think given, the market's kind of benign towards the election is my expectation. I mean, I think they're paying attention to it. But given the market reaction last Friday with the FBI announcement, I mean, you had stocks selling off. The Mexican peso sold off given Trump's hard line with Mexico. But I would suspect since Clinton seems to be, again, according to the polls, kind of the certain candidate, it would be met with probably stable stock market or even a rally, because I think you know, it's four more years of the last 8 years probably, and, you know, the market doesn't like the uncertainty. Trump, of course, being the more uncertain candidate, and the market's abhorrence towards uncertainty creates that air of market uncertainty, and the market does not like it. So, yeah, in the short term, I would also expect that we could probably see, you know, maybe a short sell-off, perhaps something like we saw in Brexit, where the market sold off, market participants repositioned themselves, but after about a week, it recovered. And I was reading something this morning that, given a new president, usually there's a relief rally over the coming 12 months, and on average, markets are up about 6%. So just a little more insight on, I think, what my reaction to is given a Trump versus Clinton win.
Thanks, Greg. And you know, I guess that sort of dives right into the unexpected outcome. And John, do you agree with Greg's comments? You know, it could be sort of disruptive, similar to Brexit in the short term, if you saw, let's just call it a Republican sweep outcome.
That's certainly a plausible scenario. If, you know, right now we're in a situation where corporate earnings are slightly negative year over year to relatively flat. The same thing is happening to revenues. You know, if the economy doesn't fall apart and we're left with a trending situation like we've seen in the past, and I think that's certainly a possible outcome. You know, the longer term, you know, maybe a little bit different, but in the immediate term, I think that's as likely as anything.
And what do you think, you know, you had mentioned that you thought the expected outcome that we talked about originally, you said about 80% odds. Does that mean, is it, you know, 10% likelihood that you see a Trump win and Republicans take both the Senate and House?
The odds of a Republican sweep are probably pretty low. I mean, a lot of voting has already occurred, and I don't know to what extent voting might change based on the recent revelations from the FBI or not, but someone threw out the number the other day that 20 million people have already voted. So a lot of votes are already there. I don't think revelations one way or the other are going to change anybody's mind at this point, again, because of the hard lines that have already been drawn. So, I would think the odds of a Republican sweep are pretty low.
And then what about, a Democratic sweep? I know I think it's 30 seats in the House they have to take. Is that the market right now? Well, what were the odds of a Dem sweep?
Pretty low. I think the odds of a Democratic sweep would be pretty low. Now, if you did get a Democratic sweep, if that happened, the thought is that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren would be driving things in Congress, and considering how far left they are and what they seem to think is the right thing to do in terms of regulation, that would be a highly negative event were that to happen. So people are already thinking about what that possibility might mean in terms of regulations and taxes and everything else. That probably would not be a positive outcome. The best outcome probably would be, a status quo type situation because, both candidates have issues surrounding them that create a lot of uncertainty in people's minds and, some sort of balanced outcome between the executive branch and Congress is probably the best outlook we could see at this point.
Okay, yeah, that's great.
One more statistic on the election that I heard last night on the evening news that this goes to what you said, John, about how many votes have been cast. They said that early voting levels for the upcoming elections have surpassed both 2008 and 2012 elections, which is kind of an amazing statement. And I guess the way I interpret that is either it's going to be a really, really much closer election than the polls suggest, or a much wider one. I don't know. What do you think?
Nobody has a good handle on that. You're right. I guess it could swing either way. But I think it's going to be close. That would be my guess, looking at all of the polling data that's out there. And the polling data is kind of skewed. you know, the odds regardless of which poll or which betting market you look at seem to be, you know, coming much closer together. So it could be a very tight election. There was an article in the news this morning about the armies of lawyers that Republicans and Democrats have amassed to check on election results around the country. And if it's a very close election, it may be one of those elections that is not decided in the first day. It may take a while. We've seen that before, too. And I guess that's also a possibility.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yes, let's do.
Jeff and Richard, anything you want to add before we move on to the economy?
I've been watching some of the, I guess, more of the down ballot races, as well as kind of the controversy between Paul Ryan and Donald Trump, and looking for any evidence that maybe Paul Ryan could be in jeopardy. And I think that's, again, that doesn't make the headlines nearly as much, but in terms of policy and direction and gridlock and all those sorts of things, Paul Ryan's known to be a moderate, I would say anyway, in terms of interaction with the Democrats. So, you know, to the extent that that Paul Ryan remains as head of the House, the Speaker of the House, and that you know, he can drive policy, I think even if Hillary gets elected, he is a you know, he is somebody who's more likely to get some kind of compromise done. And I think a lot of Trump's bluster, if he were to win, probably would go away. I suspect that I don't see anybody that's really ready to step up and take Paul Ryan's spot. So a lot of the controversy there probably is overblown. But I think that's one of the interesting aspects of this race that a lot of people really aren't paying close attention to.
Yeah, it's a good point. So much attention has been focused on the presidential election. A lot of the House and Senate races have kind of been pushed to the side. Richard, anything else before we move on to the economy?
Yeah, I'll just mention one quick point, and that is this is more on the down ballot races, and particularly the Senate. There's been a pretty significant trend since the 70s of the president who wins, the party that wins the presidency, tends to carry along in his coattails the Senate. And, you know, the Senate only requires, I think, five or six seat pickup for the Democrats to take control. But there's a very high correlation between who wins the presidency, the party that wins, and what happens in the Senate. I think the correlation's up to about 80%. Recently, that's been climbing for decades. So, very interesting phenomenon. So, it you know, if you believe that is going to continue, then it really matters a lot. And the Senate is very much, I think, a coin toss as to how it's going to go. But it's going to matter, you know, who wins the executive position.
Yep.
That's really all I had to say at this point.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for the comments. It'll definitely be an interesting day next Tuesday. Let's go ahead and we spent a fair amount of time on that topic, but it's also obviously very important and pressing. But, John, one thing that we saw was last week was GDP for the third quarter came out at 2.9%. I think that was a little better than a lot of people anticipated. I think, you know, a lot of people were expecting it to be somewhere in the 2 to 2.5% range. Give us a little color on that, and you know, are we building a little momentum heading into the end of the year?
On the surface, it looked like a pretty good report. As you mentioned, the consensus was closer to 2, and it came in at 2.9. When you tear the numbers apart, you find that a great deal of the unexpected increase above 2% came from inventory building. It was the first positive quarter for inventory building in about 4 or 5 quarters, and you could theorize that that's because sales have probably, or let's say inventory levels have probably gotten pretty much in line with sales, and companies are pretty satisfied with where they are, and they're not reducing inventory anymore, and that had been going on again for like 4 or 5 quarters. But that number is highly volatile, and it doesn't necessarily suggest that any sort of trend change has occurred. The other interesting thing about the detail is that exports were up, but a good bit of the exports, according to one analysis, reflected a one-time shipment of soybeans. I know it sounds odd, but, there you are. So the exports were up a bit, but that seemed to be something of an anomaly. Consumer spending, not much there, really. The Bureau of Economic Analysis has a bottom-line number that people like to look at that sort of gives you a picture of what the economy is doing at its base. And it's called the it's basically an ongoing consumer sales type number. Real final sales is what they call it. I guess that includes business sales as well. But it was about 2.3%. It was actually down about 30 basis points from the previous quarter. So that really doesn't suggest any particular change in trend either. Bottom line, we seem to still be, and year over year, by the way, the 12-month rolling GDP growth number is still a little bit less than 2%. The number since the recovery has been, on a trend basis, less than 2%. And, you know, nothing really seems to have changed a great deal. There was nothing in the latest number that suggested we were on the verge of a breakout of any kind to a sustained, you know, higher level of growth, like, you know, something like 3% or so. So it looks like, you know, what has been happening is still happening.
Okay. Richard, sort of along those same lines, you know, as we move into the fourth quarter, historically Christmas retail sales are a good barometer of the health of the economy, the health of the consumer. Obviously, for a lot of retailers, that makes up a significant percentage of their revenue on an annual basis. Any projections or outlook? Are you seeing anything to suggest that this might be a good holiday shopping season?
I wish that was the case, Dave. I think that's we can hope for that, and I can mention in a minute one particular way that could happen. But in general, I think it's going to be a pretty downbeat holiday shopping season, and I'll give you a couple of reasons for that. You know, we did have a pretty strong consumer spending pattern going on in the second quarter. It was about 4.3% growth rate in the second quarter, but in the third quarter, it's dropped significantly to 2.1%. We think that more than likely in the fourth quarter here, which is obviously when the Christmas shopping season occurs, several things are kind of creating some headwinds for consumer spending. One of them is that bank lending standards have been tightening up. I know not everybody, you know, purchases their Christmas gifts on credit, but some do. And you know, lending and credit is the grease that makes the economy go to a large extent. But lending standards have been tightening up, and that's because banks are seeing that delinquency rates, particularly on things like auto loans, have been rising. So they're, you know, to protect their bottom line, they are tightening standards. Secondly, the wages and salaries grew pretty strongly in Q3, in the third quarter, up about 4.5% rate of growth. But we think that's likely to be slowing down as well. We think that the reason for that is profits and profit margins among companies that employ people are being squeezed, and so we think that employment growth and wage growth is going to be moderating into the fourth quarter. And so without the growth in consumer income, more than likely that's going to put a damper on consumer spending. And just to add to one other item that could also create a headwind is that you've got these surging healthcare prices that we've all heard about, and you know, particularly in insurance premiums, those are squeezing consumers a good bit, and will continue to, as well as we've had gasoline prices creeping up to some degree, you know, taking away from discretionary spending, and also mortgage rates. Even though they're still low, they have been on the rising side since we've been having a yield rally, or another way to put it, bond prices have been going down, rates have been going up. So we don't think that this is going to be a very strong season. The one way it could happen is that if consumers relented and started reducing their savings rate, and just to give you a little background there, the savings rate got very, very low pre-credit crisis. But once the credit crisis occurred in 2007 and 8, consumers started saving more of their income and putting it in the bank or paying down debt. And the only way we see that we could have a stronger season if people decided to dip into savings to buy Christmas gifts, I think there's some small chance of that happening, but we really think there's been a behavioral shift among consumers to protect their own bottom line, and that without that savings rate reduction, this is going to be a pretty downbeat Christmas season. So that's the SBA expectation. I think it makes the most sense. And I just want to make a couple of comments, Dave, about stepping back a bit and looking at where we are in the economic cycle. You know, we've had a long cycle of expansion. It's not been robust by any means. It's been the lowest rate of growth post-World War II, you know, around 2% or so growth on an annualized basis. But we think it's definitely getting long in the tooth. We're probably in the late stages of a cycle. Doesn't mean that we're about to enter a recession quickly, but we think the recession probability is going to be rising into 2017, and that there's pretty good odds that by 2018 sometime that we could be looking at a recession. You can't say for sure, certainly can't say what degree of severity it would be, but there are some excesses building up that point toward that. And just to give you one or two examples, we've got corporate profits have been declining for 7 quarters in a row. They're not, you know, in a tailspin, but we expected to see them ramping up over the last couple of quarters, and it really hasn't happened. Maybe this one will be the one that turns it around, but that's a very bad sign. And with corporate profits dropping, capital expenditures go down, certainly wage growth has to moderate in that kind of environment. Secondly, wage inflation has been growing at a faster pace than corporate revenues. John mentioned corporate revenues briefly a few minutes ago, and that is another clear sign of a problem for corporate America. And in the past, when that's happened, it's been a danger sign for an imminent or a coming recession. That's not a sustainable situation for wage growth to be growing faster than revenues. It just doesn't work. So something has to give there in the pace of hiring, or in a lack of wage growth, or in eventually job cuts. So with those things, as well as a few others that I will not mention due to time, we think that, you know, recession is not around the corner, but it's certainly out there and probably not terribly far in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
Greg, I hope you have some good news. I guess the results from the market in October were not all that great. You know, we had a negative month, S&P 500 down 1.8%, Russell 1000, which is just another benchmark for large cap stocks, down 2%. Small cap stocks, and looking at the Russell 2000, down 4.8%. And then international stocks actually fared pretty decently, down 1.4%. If you could give us a little color regarding the month, and then let's talk about, I know we discussed the potential impact of the election on the market quite a bit, but outside of that, anything driving the market one way or the other that you're watching at this point?
Yeah, just looking at the sectors, it was kind of a big reversal where we've had small caps being the strongest area of the market, and they continue to be year to date, up about 6.2% versus the Russell 1000, which is at about 6%, so just edging out large cap stocks. But they took a hit this month, and really the only sector in, say, the Russell 2000 small cap was utilities. Everything else was negative. The worst performing sector was healthcare, which was down almost 12%. That was followed by energy down 8%, Consumer discretionary, about 5%. Same with information technology. Same with real estate. Same with materials. And then same, almost 4.5% down were industrials. So the remaining sectors, staples, telecommunications, about 1.75, 1.2, and 3%. So really not a really great month. But again, overall, if you look at the year-to-date figures, I mean, financials are up almost 18%. Consumer staples on the small end up 14%. Industrials up 12%. Materials a whopping 27%, or almost 27%. And then real estate and technology up 12%. So, yeah, bad month, but year-to-date still, you know, solid on the small cap side. Moving on to the large cap side, you actually had two sectors that had positive contributions. Utilities up 2%, and financials up 2%, and utilities up about 1%. So the rest of the other sectors, although not as dramatic declines as we saw in the small cap area, but again, healthcare was at the bottom, down about 7% versus smalls 12%. And then followed by real estate and telecom, which were down over 5%, almost 6% for telecom. And then everything else was about down 1% to 2%. But again, looking at the year-to-date figures, virtually every sector is positive in the large cap space, healthcare being the only exception, which is still negative year-to-date. That's down 5.36%. And in the small cap sector, that was down 13%. But in the large cap space, the utilities up 17.6, which kind of goes with the whole dividend and searching for yield kind of strategy that's been pervasive this entire year. The consumer, information technology up almost 12%. Industrials up 8, materials up 11, and energy up 14 year to date. So again, the year-to-date figures don't look too bad. Looking a little bit forward, I have been looking at, again, the election tie-in. I think you mentioned, I know we kind of exhausted that issue, but I've been kind of following the volatility index, which we've mentioned on these calls before, and what it does is it captures the fear or market fear and anxiety on a short-term basis. And it's been climbing. It was up in the middle of October, then it kind of declined again, and I think some of the more recent, as we got closer to the election, it's been climbing, but by no way is it really shooting through the roof. It's nowhere near what it was for Brexit. So, again, I reiterate, I think, you know, the market, there's going to be some short-term volatility, but at least at this point, it doesn't look like it's going to be anything severe or even, you know, as dramatic as Brexit. During Brexit, volatility spiked almost double from where we are right now. So, again, just going back to, you know, Trump being the uncertain and Clinton being the more certain candidate, you might get that sell-off with Trump because of just the unknown nature. And so I think that's where it stands right now.
All right, Greg. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Jeff, not to be outdone, the bond market decided it wanted to have an exciting month as well. Saw a big jump in yields. I think we started the month around 160. This morning we're pushing on 190. Quite a significant move, and if you kind of look at where we were, I think it was right around July 4th. I think we were at 135, so we've seen a really significant jump in yields. We're going to want you to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about the Fed briefly.
Sure. Well, you're right. It was the worst month for Treasury yields and bonds in general in a long time. The price of the 10-year Treasury dropped about 2%, and that's a large move in the bond world. And I guess we were long overdue. We had certainly had a huge rally, and we were sort of levitating. And as Richard mentioned, we had some news that popped up, a little bit of wage inflation, some commodities started to show some improvement. And then, of course, in the oil and gas area, we had a what initially was thought of as a pretty positive development between Iran, Iraq, and Russia in curbing some of the production that was supporting oil prices. We saw oil prices move up over $50 a barrel. So everybody thought, uh-oh, get ready, we're going to start to see some inflation. So we had a lot of fear of inflation. We didn't necessarily have actual inflation, but we had fear of it, and that pushed yields up and bond prices down. It looks like that agreement, incidentally, is coming apart. Oil prices are back down as well as other commodity prices. So I suspect that this was a little bit of a head fake in terms of this move up, but we were due for something along those lines. The other aspect is just that you know, China's doing a little bit better outside our borders. Some things are improving. So there was just a lot of things coming together, and then the expectation that, again, if Hillary is elected, there's likely to be some stimulus packages and some government spending that'll help the economy somewhat. So a couple things coming together that pushed rates a little higher this past month.
Okay. And then I think the Fed meets tomorrow, right?
That's right. The Fed's getting together. Not much will happen. It's almost, I think it's about a 76% certainty right now that the Fed raises in at their December meeting. The Fed has a history.
December 14th, right?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't have it in front of me, but that sounds about right.
Yep.
The Fed has a history of really raising rates at meetings where they have scheduled press conferences so that they can talk about it and discuss it. That happens in December, so the investment world has coalesced around that December date, and certainly what we hear coming out of the Fed seems to indicate that. The Fed wants to raise rates. The 2.9 GDP print is probably helping them to do that, so there doesn't seem to be anything standing in the way of them raising. Probably where our view of the world is a little different than most of our peers is that we really don't see multiple raises next year. The Fed right now, people expect two or three raises. I think it probably ends up being one, that the Fed again gets in the same box that they've gotten in the last couple years, is that something pops up and they kind of procrastinate and they'll end up raising towards the end of the year. But we'll see about that. They definitely want to raise. There's a movement in central banks around the world, much like here, that the quantitative easing that they've been working on for many years now since the credit crisis really isn't working, and now stimulus or spending programs by governments is what the next step is going to be. So a little less emphasis on monetary policy, more emphasis on fiscal policy over the, you know, in the future.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much. We'll end the call there. Covered a lot of ground today. Appreciate your participation. Next month's call will be on December 6th. Look forward to speaking with you then. Thanks.